to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us today, Bill?
Well, we have a sponsor, one of a few sponsors here, Pape Machinery. They are our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard up in the city of Shasta Lake. Go up and see them. Got a great inventory right now of brand new John Deere tractors, mowers, implements, you name it. Go up and see them. If they don't have it, they can get it to you in short order. They also have full parts and service that can fix up what you're working on. Or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and the word in, I know you're all going to be shocked, but the word from the control booth here is that Ambassador Rooney is missing in action.
Oh, no.
Ruh-roh.
No, he's back with us.
Oh, he's back.
Oh, he's back.
I thought we were going to have that thing we had a couple weeks ago.
Where not the
like,
thing.
Oh, no.
Ronnie's here. He's on the line with us.
Nice, Ambassador Rooney.
How are you?
He gave me a little. A couple of weeks ago, we called this lady she was going to be on, and it turned out she had a surgery on Friday, and by Sunday, she had to go to the emergency room, so at 11:30, she went to the emergency room, forgot about us, and we were like, hello?
Can you imagine calling that? Going to an emergency room over us, I don't understand.
And she
that.
Didn't call.
Yeah.
No.
We weren't on her emergency contact list, so anyway, now I'm worried. Now if they don't answer on the first ring, it's like, oh no, it's happening again.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Well, you know, having been in politics, I'm careful about answering phones where names don't come up.
Oh yeah.
That's a problem.
I had a phone call last night. We'll just leave that go because it was, you know, I got to say, this has been a very strange week, and I haven't found anybody that hasn't had a bunch of crazy phone calls or a bunch of really bizarre interactions. I'm not sure. Maybe we should have had some sort of psychic or astrological genius on who could have decoded that for us, because there's obviously something weird going around. Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, well,
for those people who haven't caught previous shows with you, you're obviously an American, and now you're you were a politician, and you already confessed that, and a diplomat. So you've done a bunch of different things. You represented Florida's 19th congressional district in the Republican caucus, served as United States ambassador to the Holy See, a.k.a. the Vatican, for those who don't speak Vatican, under George W. Bush from 2005 to 2008. And I don't know, are you still the chairman of Rooney Holdings? It's got your name on it, but...
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Have you, I was going to say, have you abdicated the throne and had your children run it or anything? No.
Well, we have our children running many of our businesses, and it's great. My wife and I get to work with them.
That's
and
fun.
Mentor them, and they get to grow and make their own decisions, and it's great to see.
That's awesome.
That's great. Yeah.
And one of the things we've posted on the site for today, by the way, it is January 28th, 2024, the time we're airing this live, and your book is called The Global Vatican. And
yes.
I have links and info on there from that, and it's really super, super interesting. The little tagline here, an inside look at the Catholic Church, world politics, and the extraordinary relationship between the United States and the Holy See. Is that, just out of curiosity, back to your former connection, is that still possible? It seems like things are a little weird right now with Pope Francis.
Well, this Pope is different than the one that... was Pope when I was up there.
Yeah.
That I worked with. Pope Benedict, the German Pope, was a very doctrinaire, by the book Pope, who was very focused on the dogma of the Church and on the Holy See's ability to influence world events in a more of a diplomatic and strategic way. This new guy, he's a little more of a liberation theologist, if you will,
mm-hmm.
a little more focused on the developing world versus the developed world and that conflict that comes out of liberation theology. And that I think that makes him less effective diplomatically. And then, of course, he comes out and says, that we are to blame for Putin's insecurity because we expanded NATO. And I wrote an op-ed about that. That's totally ridiculous.
Yeah,
he's always kind of pushing the kind of the commie marching orders.
Well, it's not the first thing he's said that's
frustrated
been
about
fairly
it.
Controversial.
He wrote that encyclopedia about the environment, Laudato Si. And he didn't mention one word about these sorry African countries that are totally corrupt.
No.
He only talked about the developed world not paying enough money to those African countries so that they will not pollute.
And, it's just, it's kind of like, gosh, with him, it's sort of like stay in your lane. Would it be, so if you were teleported into your previous job and you had to be the ambassador right now, how does that work? Do they ask you things, or do you just have to sit and listen, or do you get to say, hey, you know what, this isn't actually helpful?
Well, when you're there, you've got to be careful.
Right.
But you can criticize them and protect the United States. So when he does something that's inimical to the interests of the United States, you got to speak up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I wasn't sure how much piping
absolutely.
Up you get to do.
Just like any other secular mission. I mean, when France does something that we don't like, the ambassador better go there and speak up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how much of it was, you were sort of trapped in the nice bubble.
The job's to protect U.S. interests.
So bottom line is, if we have an ambassador who isn't doing that, it isn't because they can't, it's because they're not doing that.
That's right. The job is to protect the United States' interests, period. Diplomatically, practically, dealing with foreign visitors that have business with the Holy See, that come from the United States, that we could help. All those things that go into leveraging the relationship for the benefit of our country.
Well, that's, I guess, what most of us would think they were doing, but then some of them, you look at it and you go, are they playing for the wrong team? Or are there some kind of weird rules we don't know about? But, I bet that was a really, like as a kid, you probably never thought, gee, I think I'm going to grow up and be an ambassador to the Vatican. It's probably not on your list of things to do. Talk to us.
Well, it was a great opportunity for me and my family, both to live in Rome and to be at the seat of the church, but also to work so closely with a Pope that really cared about the United States and a president that really cared what the Holy See could do in the world.
Yeah, well, because they do have a lot of reach if they use it.
Yeah. Well, you read my book. You'll see a lot of instances of things where we work with the Holy See and they did some things that we couldn't do ourselves. They did it for us.
Right, right. No, I know. You do a great job of detailing all that. I think it's kind of awesome to have that kind of behind-the-scenes look, I think, for people who may not consider, we don't hear so much from our ambassadors all the time just out in the mainstream, unless it's something that you particularly follow or something bad happens. You provide a really invaluable look at that. Today you had been contacted by our favorite friend, Stephen Manfredi, and he said, hey, how about you have the ambassador on? And he'd like to speak about Israel and the Hamas war. And it's like, oh, nobody even knows what's going on there. Everybody's fixated on it. So, but I thought you would have a really kind of an interesting vantage point on that.
Well, I mean, I think, look, you shouldn't speak about the Middle East if you haven't read the latter half of the Quran. The latter half of the Quran, after Mohammed became comfortable, confident, and successful, becomes aggressive. And that's where all that nefarious language about spread the word by the sword and take out the infidel, that's where all that stuff creeps in.
Mm-hmm.
And people should read that. And understand that is really part of their Bible. And when they get up and jump up and down about jihad and all that, that's the stuff they're reading from.
Right. The idea that it's this... We've done so many shows on Islam, and anybody who still thinks it's the religion of peace really needs to go back and listen. There's an entire undercurrent, and has always been, about domination and subjugation and all of that.
Oh, it's a very warlike religion.
Mm-hmm.
At least the last half of the Quran, after Muhammad became successful and decided to take over the world, or whatever part of the world he could get.
Yeah. Well, he had a... there's a really cool book called It's All About Muhammad. Like, the book is all about Muhammad, but the book is called It's All About Muhammad. And basically, it's a biography of Muhammad from when he was a small boy.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, you can't put it down. You read that book, and it's a page.
I'll check it out.
Yeah,
it's an eye opener.
And it's all backed up with sources. I mean, the back part of the book will give you
pages and pages of sources.
Yeah. So it's not somebody's opinion. It's facts.
Yeah, it's really well researched. But yeah, once you start looking into that, you realize. I mean, he kind of started. He was kind of like a pirate, you know, pillage, get stuff, build his group, a bigger group. Let's go over and pillage those guys, take their stuff. Hey, you want to go pillage those guys? And it's kind of like reading the life of Jesus in like backwards.
Well, he really didn't do anything that the secular leaders of their time didn't do. Alexander the Great, the Seljuk Turks, etc. But just he hit it in the guise of a religion.
Yeah. And to pretend that they're all going to live together and it's all going to be peaceful.
Well, they do, as long as as the infidels do what they tell them to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as long as they pay and do what they're told. Otherwise, off with their heads.
So are you...
Right.
I don't know, surprised is probably the wrong word. I'm not sure any of us are technically surprised, but with the amount of support that the whole Hamas team, I mean, I don't know what you call it. It's a side, I suppose. But in this country, the people are supporting that and the absolute hate on Israel.
I am more than surprised. I'm shocked. And I think it exposes a material defect, debility, cancer in our country that this younger generation and all these college professors could get away with saying the things they're saying against the enemies of our life, our faith, and our country.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've been saying it for a long time.
They need to be held accountable for what they're saying.
Yep.
Yeah, I and there are people that are not young. I mean, when I was in college, I don't remember, it would have been in the 70s, early 80s, I don't remember anybody talking about any of that stuff, really at all. It was post-Vietnam.
No, the Islamic world really didn't exist back then. It started about the time of the Arab oil boycott in 73.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of started leaning that way? So what would you...
Well, people became aware that they existed.
What would you say to the people who say, well, you know, we shouldn't be defending Israel, that they, you know, that befriend, you know, being a, oh, I don't know what they, I forget the verbiage they use, but, you know, being Team Israel is bad, and it's bad for our country.
Well, first of all, I would say that the Jews were in Samaria and Judea right after Moses, so they've been there a long time. You can't really say they're interlopers. And there's a lot of land over there, and the Palestinians and the Jews have never quite got along all that great. But I'm not sure that that's the fault of the Israelis or the Jews. Palestinians were murdering Jews before there was an Israel. And it goes back to that religion, you know,
yep.
The infidel.
Yep. It never
ended. They became an Israel, and they had a different excuse to try to come after them. And Israel's trying to defend itself. And remember, Hamas invaded them.
Right.
They didn't go over there and attack Hamas. Hamas invaded them and killed 1,400 people.
Yeah, and for them now, I mean, to say, oh, they've gone too far. They need to stop. Well, I don't think they can stop. They have to put an end to this. Otherwise, it's just going to happen again, isn't it?
Yeah, it will. And if you don't cut the head off the snake. And first and second of all, you know, we saw this in the Lebanon War in 2007. The Hamas and or Hezbollah uses human shields. They maximize civilian casualties because they do not value life. And that makes it harder for our liberals to accept. And we need to look beyond the deaths and say, wait, who's causing them really? I think the Palestinians are causing them. Hamas is causing them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just think it's so difficult to say that, to just look at that whole thing and hear everybody's just going about their lives. These guys come and attack them and they're the good guys. It's like, wait, that's, I can't think of an instance where that has been the, you know what I mean?
Well, like, I think it's exposing some really defective philosophy among the generation that began shortly before 2000. The recent one most inculcated with the radicalism of college professors. And some of the stuff that we're seeing about this settler colonialism and how Palestinians are just like Indians and Indians are just like blacks and else that has a beef with the people. I mean, it's like it's a very insidious mantra because it can be expanded to anybody that's got a beef. If I have a beef, I'm saying, oh yeah, I'm colonized.
You're a colonizer.
And exposed. Yeah, right.
You know what? When we come back, we've got to take a quick break. When we come back, can you peel that apart in a little bit more detail and maybe give people better information on that? Because honestly, you know it's crazy, but I'm not sure a lot of people have a good argument for that. So maybe you could help them with their argument. How's that?
Sure.
To win the argument. We'll be right back. Our guest is Ambassador Francis Rooney. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Chain reaction, strange attraction. I guess that's that was a good lead in for this. I didn't really think about that. But Ambassador, it makes no sense, you know, when people want to say that the Israelis are colonizers and all that. I mean, for heaven's sakes, I'm not sure we're all that great with geography, but for the people that are unclear about the size of Israel, Israel can fit in the state of California 8 times. It's not a big place. And to think that these guys can roll in and bomb them and all that, and the people in the tiny country living their lives who really pretty much get along with almost everybody, they have a little bit of everybody in their country, and they're really, I don't know, they all seem pretty happy for the most part. Uh-oh, is he on mute? Is he trapped?
You got to remember a couple of things,
there he is.
Okay?
You're back.
First of all, towards the end of Bill Clinton's term, a couple of guys from the CIA who are friends of mine, and Ehud Barak, the Prime Minister of Israel, and Yasser Arafat met. And the Ehud Barak wrote down all the things that Yasser Arafat had asked for. And Arafat walked out of the room. He didn't want peace. He needs a pinata to flog so he can get more money. He didn't care about his country.
Mm-hmm.
And then, later, the same thing happened with Olmert, with Abbas, where Olmert offered Abbas pretty much everything they were asking for, maybe one or two things not, but mostly, and Abbas walked out. These guys, the conundrum of Palestine is, everybody would like them to have a state. The two-state solution is probably the only long-term, but it's an idealistic notion right now. We have to work towards it, but we've got to come up with a way to find some Palestinians or other Arabs that can operate a country. You know, like get the trash picked up, make the electricity and water work, have police, kill off bad guys, the whole bit. And we haven't been able to find the secret sauce on that yet.
Yeah. That, and just based on your experience over there, do you think they exist?
Someday I'm optimistic that they will. I mean, there have been a lot of other countries evolve to get to a better place. But these guys haven't been able to figure it out yet.
Yeah.
Nor have a lot of other countries in the Middle East, like Iraq and Afghanistan.
Do you think the two-state solution is kind of a pipe dream, or do you think that'll ever happen?
I think it's an aspirational goal that we have to work towards.
Even if they
How can you say to the Palestinians, there's no hope for you to have a state?
Right.
But let's say they did create them a state, like just based on everything we've been watching over the years, I'm not really sure that would... I'm not sure they'd be happy with that. You know what I mean?
Well, they were happy with the idea of Hamas coming in and offering promise of running a good country. You know, like I said, like a mayor, get
right.
the trash picked up, make the electricity work, etc. Not all this big fancy policy, because the PA was so corrupt. And then come in Hamas, and they turned into a terrorist organization, which really no better or maybe even worse than the PA.
Right. So they've got to really look at their own leadership and come up
they do.
With a
And that's
solution.
Why I say, you know, they should be held accountable for their people.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone will say all this bad stuff about Israel and all that, but why don't we say, Palestinians, take responsibility for your life?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Which I would say the same thing to the college kids that we're seeing protesting about Israel right now. You better take responsibility for your life, not theirs.
Yeah. I don't... It's never a dialogue. It's always, we're going to beat you into submission, and if you don't submit, we're just going to get louder and more violent, and then we're going to make you agree with us. And it's like, I'm not really sure that's a winning strategy.
Well, it doesn't hurt when the impartial arbiters, the people in charge, like the university presidents and whatnot, can't figure out how to say exactly that. You can protest, you have rights, but other people have rights too. And we're an impartial arbiter of everybody's opportunity to express themselves under the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
These college professors and college presidents don't seem to be able to do that.
Well, they don't seem to be able to teach, you know, real history. I mean, if you go back and look at the history, I think a lot of these kids wouldn't be quite so confused about who they're cheering for. It's just nuts to think that current state of Palestine or the West Bank or whatever is gonna, you know, lay down their weapons and agree or get along. I mean, I think, you know, they've been fighting for so long. They really need a change of attitudes and leadership to kind of open the dialogue.
I blame professors and college administrators for that, mm-hmm. by not allowing the free and full expression of all sides and
right.
trying to repress any voice that they disagree with.
And why
that's totalitarianism in itself.
Why do you think that is? That they want to go just with a one-sided philosophy?
Now, I think they've become intellectually degraded by their and overwhelmed by their or consumed, I should say, consumed by their desire to accomplish certain woke objectives in terms of education and the kind of things people think, radical views and the suppression of any kind of conservative opposing thought, and that creates a very bad climate.
Right. Well, they've been doing it for so long, and they've been doing it with the support of a lot of folks, a lot of the media. I mean, so much of this has just gone unchecked for so long, and now
yeah.
we're starting to see the result of this.
But at least a lot of big donors and alumni are starting to speak up now and saying, wait a minute.
Yes.
You've been doing all this garbage under our nose, and we're not going to stand for it.
Yeah.
Right.
So when they come at you with their colonizers, what's your... You know, I mean, if you actually were able to make a reasonable argument.
You have to contextualize life. I mean, you have to contextualize how the Egyptians treated the Israelites, how Genghis Khan treated the people he conquered, how the world evolved in the Middle Ages with serfs and villains and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And those were tough times, and a lot of people were killed for very mm-hmm. minor offenses. If you made your lord mad, he'd cut your head off.
Right.
So this is nothing new in the evolution of history. So then you move into modern times, and you have, you know, totalitarian regimes like Hitler and Marxism, and they preyed on people's weakness and got control of their country, and people couldn't speak up. And that's why our First Amendment and our Constitution is a bulwark against that happening now. And so when these college professors and DAs and stuff like that are willing to pursue a philosophy of the end justifies the means, then we've forsaken the constitutional protections, and we're just like no different than communism.
Right.
We're just going for the result we want.
Yeah, and we'll browbeat you until we get it. And if we have to, we'll lie.
Yeah.
Because a lot of this
but
is...
But I think there's a bit of a pushback now. I'm seeing in some incipient pushbacks, and I'm really hopeful it develops.
The tough part is when you kind of get into the... you know, out into society, and you have these, you know, you have these groups that feel so empowered that they can go bully somebody in the street or at their home, or and it's like, where in American life has that ever been acceptable? I mean, it's been done,
yeah, well,
but it hasn't been acceptable.
This whole liberal thing of getting rid of the police, no cash bail, and you know, in California, you can steal up to $900 and they won't prosecute you. You know, I saw some article where there was one guy in some California town that had hit the same Walmart or Costco like 10, 15 times, and he always steals less than $900 and they can't pick him up.
Yeah.
So you look at that kind of stuff, and how degrading is that to our culture and values of society that people get away with that? In D.C. right now, we have 14- and 15-year-olds being used as mules by the gangs to hijack cars. Because they know that if you pick a kid up, they're going to let him out.
Yeah, I think I've told this before, but I went into a store here in town, and the girl looked a little, it's a small place, and she looked a little freaked out, and I said, you know, are you okay? And she said, we just got robbed. And I'm like, what? Do you need to call somebody? She's like, I don't think they'll do anything. They're gone. And I never saw anybody going in or out, but it's in a shopping center. And she said there were four of them that came in. One had a calculator, and the other three ran around the place and took stuff, shouting out the prices. And as soon as they hit the...
So they could stay under the felony limit.
Yep. As soon as they hit 950, they just ran right out the door. And I thought, got to be kidding me.
It's nuts. But I do think there's a bit of a backlash on some of that now.
Yeah, people are getting tired of it.
There's still a lot more sane people than there are spoiled kids and criminals.
True. Well, when... like, on the history of Israel as a country, like, maybe you could... give people a little short overview kind of on the whole West Bank and all that whole thing, because that's kind of that's one they exploit a lot because people are kind of uninformed about that.
Well, if you go over there and you see how small it is, you can appreciate Israel's interest in having the West Bank, because the original territory of Israel is very small.
Mm-hmm.
And of course Jerusalem is partitioned among all the different sects. The question is, what should the Palestinians have? And there are Palestinians that live quite comfortably in the West Bank. They have farms and they have jobs. And then there's this problem of Gaza, where nobody's been able to create a state there that would be functional. And I don't think you can blame Israel for that. That's been all Palestinians. It's been their sandbox,
mm-hmm.
literally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think at some point they have to take responsibility for what they have and say, hey, look, this isn't working for us. We could have it much better. Let's make some changes. But I don't know. They don't seem to be able to see that. They don't seem to be able to...
No, they seem to go for the same victimhood that you see some of these movements in the United States. Everybody's a victim of some colonizer.
Right.
Yeah, the hard and the hard part with that too is, I mean, when you're raising your children to hate the people who basically live next door, the outcome of that is always going to be bad.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. There's like a million jokes, you know. So is that meme that circulates around during this whole thing? It's a big white room, a giant white room actually, and there's nothing in it. There's some guy standing in there, and it's captioned a Palestinian Museum of History.
Yeah.
Because I mean, honestly, what have they done in history? What contribution have they made?
Yeah, they've always been the non-Jewish tribal people going back to the Bible. You know, they were there in Judea and Samaria, and then the Jews were there too. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't all this hegemony; they were just all there. And I don't recall there was a lot of conflict. I mean, you had the Good Samaritan, you know, that kind of thing. I think a lot of this geopolitics and conflict has arisen by the development of a successful Israeli state and the inability of the Palestinians to provide something for themselves.
Right. Well, see, that's part of what I don't really understand is Israel had, when they became a state, they had nothing. I mean, they started from scratch, just like everybody else over there. And they've been able to produce a society that's successful and you know, has...
Gosh, they've made a zillion innovations.
Yeah, I mean but their geography... and resources are no different than their neighbors to speak of. Some of their neighbors are much better off resource-wise than Israel, but they don't seem to be able to develop a society that is successful and able to build and grow and
well, they take everything that they have. All their resources get stripped down and used to make tunnels so they can kill their neighbors.
Well, and weapons they seem to be focused on warring rather than growing a successful society. And it doesn't seem like it's that hard to identify that you're kind of on the wrong path here. It's if we change directions, maybe we can have some of what our neighbors have.
Well, that gets back to finding some Palestinians or Arabs that are willing to not be corrupt and to build a country for their future people and not take it all for themselves. And that hasn't happened yet over there.
And you think that's the corruption part of it has been part of their society for forever?
Well, yeah, there's a pretty embedded corruption ethic there. Mm-hmm. But it's more than that. It's the inability of any Palestinian yet to forego theft and build a country. I mean, there's no Washington, Franklin, Jefferson, Hamilton over there that says, I'm going to put the country ahead of me. That hasn't happened yet.
Right.
It's happened in Israel, for sure, but not there.
Yeah, and I think that's really what it's going to take for other people to look at it and go, hey, you know what, this seems to be working out. Let's go down this road. But I don't know, as long as, you know, there's been time, they've never been able to figure that part out.
That's never been the focus.
The Israelis have tried. You know, companies like Elbit Industries and stuff have gone over to Gaza plants and hired the locals and trained them and tried to give them make where they could have productive incomes. You know, they've tried, but
yeah, it's not like
it hasn't been scaled up.
Yeah, it's not like nobody ever gave them a break. I mean, people have gone over there and tried to build business and try to make things work, but it always seems to fall back on the same ideology.
We hate you. Yeah. We must kill you.
We need more rockets.
We can't move forward because you're bad.
Well, see, and that goes back to Arafat and Abbas not wanting to cut a deal. They don't really want a deal. They want a pinata to swat
right,
at.
Right. Yeah, that's
which is,
and when the pinata is much bigger and stronger than you, that's really not a good plan. because it's what's going to happen is what's happening right now is they're going to hit back, and they're not going to hit back once. They're going
to. I'm curious. We have to take a quick break again, but when we, I'm curious if you were if you were on the hot seat for a prediction where you think maybe this goes in the short run. You know, maybe not 100 years from now, but maybe in the short run. Do we solve it? Do we just fight forever? I'm kind of curious what you think based on your experience. We'll be right back. Our guest is Ambassador Francis Rooney. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. Out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch, but it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much. Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy?
Yeah, I'm sure they're working on that technology as we speak.
Nice.
You shoot you down with the angry eyes, you know. Loggins and Messina figured that out a long time ago. So where do you think this is gonna go? I mean,
is anything changed, or will anything change as a result of?
Because people are getting kind of pissed off about the aid. That's the whole thing, you know. Hey, we need to stop helping them. I don't know. What do you think? Whoops. I think he's...
Yeah, I don't think anybody's concerned about that. I mean, I think our country's focused on helping Israel.
Oh, no, there's a huge pushback on the aid.
Well, yeah, but I mean, this gets you back to your college students and your professors and things like that. No, I think the American people seem to be pretty far solidly behind letting Israel defend itself.
Yeah.
If that changes, we are really in trouble.
Yeah, because there's a lot of pressure on the members of Congress to reel in the aid. You know, well, hey, how long are we going to help these guys? How long is this going to go on? And I'm kind of surprised at where that's originating, because it isn't the college students or the professors. These are just rank and file regular people, and they're looking at the board. What they're doing is. I guess conflating isn't really the right word, but they are with the border. You know, we can't fix our own border. Why are we helping all these foreign countries?
Like, well, we can fix our border. We've just got to have political will to do it.
Right. I mean, like if we didn't spend the money on Israel, that would fix the border somehow, which isn't a thing. But
no, the two aren't related at all.
No, they're not.
Fixing the border is a very simple proposition of stopping people from claiming asylum if they're already here, limiting asylum claims. Don't have this parole thing, this free program of the president to let anybody in he wants, which has gotten to be 1.5 million people this year.
Yeah.
Stop all that garbage and secure the border. And we can use technology to do that.
Well, we've done
it. We can put enough drones and stuff up there to see anything that's moving, from a jackrabbit to a missile.
Well, we're not making any effort. We're helping them come in and then letting them go to wherever they want. But I guess
that seems
I'm just
to be what some of the government wants.
Yeah, they obviously want it; otherwise, it wouldn't be happening. But I worry that things like this conflict in Israel get caught in the crossfire because people are so up in arms about that sort of thing. And I don't think they really separate those. It's almost like if we weren't helping Israel,
Ukraine,
we could close the border. And it's like, well, that's not actually. That's not.
But isn't that the syllogism that they're deploying now about Ukraine?
Yes,
the,
and
the
I was
hardcore
just,
conservatives are saying, you know, if you want Ukraine money, you got to deal with this.
Yes, and I was going to say that's really that's kind of part and parcel, same thing. We could close.
And they're two different issues.
Yeah, I do see using it as leverage. I mean, they are trying to use it as leverage to force the Biden administration to deal with the border. I mean, that makes sense. I haven't heard really anybody make the. Well, okay. It probably has been done, but I hear it more from the public than I do from members in Congress that if we weren't spending money on Ukraine, then it would be we could close the border. I hear that from people.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And that's not really.
It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But you know the good thing about all that? It's gone broader than that now. Now people are just saying, Democrats and Republicans, secure the border. Not
right.
worrying about Ukraine or anybody else. Secure the border. And that's why Biden, this feckless leader, has come out and said, oh, yeah, we'll just secure the border. Well, when did he wake up and figure that out?
Right.
Because the people are telling him that. His people are telling him that. His Democrats are telling him that.
Yeah, I just hope they get louder because, you know, the crazy part is everybody's like, well, we need comprehensive immigration reform. It's like, well, I know. I have an idea. Let's follow the laws we actually have and see if it works.
Yeah.
Like, let's just see what happens.
Well,
we
never had any problem. Go back. We were always able to secure our border. Our border was, it wasn't perfect. And people did sneak in,
but we didn't have millions of people.
Not
that we
millions of people a year. This constant flow and these caravans.
Look, social media has changed the game, and the ability of people to get to Mexico and to get themselves up near our border is so much different now than it was 5 years ago. And we need to be on top of our game to figure out how to stop it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And once they get here, to repel them rather than bring them in, give them money and bus tickets.
I mean, what George Bush tried to do in 2007 was close the border and set up a procedure for people to come get work permits. And you had to apply
right.
and be checked out and vetted. And if everything looked out good for you, you could come in and get yourself a job. And we do need the workers badly. But we need the people that are not criminals. That we understand who they are, we know where they are, we know about their family. We need to know about them, just like any citizen, you know?
Well, when you look at the, like you were saying, the million plus people who have come across the border this year, how many of those are workers? I mean, I see, people are lining the streets looking for handouts once they get over here. They're not working.
That's another issue. The federal judges have expanded the rights of illegals in some incredible areas. Like in California, they can vote. They have the right to go to an emergency room. They have the right to get certain government benefits. I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah. Well, they're overwhelming. They're totally overwhelming the system, and I think that's the plan, is to overwhelm the system. And you look at our school systems, you look at our healthcare systems, they're being overwhelmed with illegal aliens. I think you can still call them that. I just don't see enough being done to curb that, and the only way to do it is to close the border, and it just can't be that tough.
Well, we're helping other countries.
That is the only way, because, you know, I mean, I feel sorry for people that come from these crummy countries.
Oh, yeah.
But our responsibility is really to our country.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
And now we do need workers. So there needs to us, if we're going to pursue our national interest, we pursue our national interest to get the kind of people in here that can do a job and add value to our economy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel, you know, if I was a citizen of one of those countries and there was a free pass to the United States, I'd be in the next caravan too. I mean, there's no system in place right now to stop people from just saying, "Hey, I want to come. I want to take advantage of the United States. If they're going to let me in, I'm coming." That's got to stop. And it's just not that hard to close the border. We have the resources.
It's politically hard, but practically easy.
Exactly.
I think that's where people freak out about both Ukraine and Israel. It's like we're helping them maintain the sovereignty of their country while ours is...
Yeah, the focus. Yeah, exactly.
Ours is being tossed.
Well, there is no focus.
Although I think we could do all those things at the same time. So with the Israeli situation, do you see the Hamas guys ever, well, because now they've got all the support of all the countries around them, you see them ever like just, okay, I guess we're done, we'll stop attacking them? Like, how do you see that ending?
He's right. They're going to have to kill off all the Hamas leadership.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then maybe, if they're in enough disarray, then possibly we can draw the leading Arab states into some kind of coalition to save Gaza. Because at the end of the day, they're the people that are there. They're the people that have the same religion. They need to take the front end of how to deal with Gaza instead of having the United States or Israel do it.
Right. Yeah, because that's always going to be a fight. That's always going to be, you don't belong here, so why will we listen to you? You're right.
Just let the moderate Arabs do it. They have the resources.
Right.
The problem is getting them to get their fingers under the rock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who do you see as being, just kind of based on your history in that part of the world, do you see anybody there being sensible?
Well, to make anything serious work, among the Arab countries, you've got to have Saudi Arabia. They're the 900-pound gorilla.
Okay.
If you don't have MBS, then there's going to be limited participation by Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Qatar, etc. They are the big country. They have the big economy. And if they would take the leadership, they may be able to come up with a provisional governing body that could support some kind of government in Gaza that would be able to be held accountable.
Well, do you think, you know, there's a will on Saudi Arabia's part to take leadership and lead that coalition? Because I don't see them working with everybody. Do you think they would be willing to do that?
I think that Anthony Blinken and the State Department guys have spent a lot of time lately in the Middle East talking about that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well...
Are there any of them in this administration, like when you say Anthony Blinken, I just want to bash my head against the table. Are there any of them that you think, because Kirby and all those guys, it just seemed to, I don't know, I can't say anything I want to say on the radio.
Anthony Blinken is a career State Department Foreign Service officer with a very distinguished career. Now, by definition, they're not going to get above their skis, and they're responding to the political authorities that they report to.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear Blinken say something, you need to spell the word Biden.
Right. Right.
It's not his fault.
He's the mouthpiece.
He is the Secretary of State executing the policy of the White House.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where it's got to change. It's got to start right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you see if Trump gets back in office? What do you see happening there?
You know, there's a lot of things about Trump that I fear. A lot of things that he says. A lot of things that he did last time that were disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope that he will not go back to this Abraham Accord thing. And continue to back whoever he picks as state, if he does win, first of all, whoever he picks as Secretary of State continues to develop the aspirational two-state solution and work to draw the Arab countries in to an intermediate governance structure that will provide the kind of guidance that that whatever leaders they can find for Gaza need.
Yeah, we just need to hope he has the foresight to
fingers
do
crossed.
Like that.
All right, we'll chat again. Ambassador, we are out of time and got to jump off here. Thank you so much for being on with us. We have Phil Kirpin coming up next hour, and we're going to talk about Wi-Fi and stuff like that. So we're going to switch gears.
Switch gears, yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Ambassador.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
time.